My name's Eli Delaney, and I have the honor of meeting some pretty cool people. These are the entrepreneurs, the artists, the creatives, the game changers that are making a positive impact in the people that they meet. And I'm a firm believer that the people that you meet can get you anywhere you want to go. And this show is my way of sharing them with you. It's my way of also helping you meet cool people. All right, welcome back, everybody. Eli here, and today on Meet Cool People, we have a more recent friend that I got to share the stage with back in October. He and I met at the Writer's Block Symposium, and this is Dr. Matt Markell. He is a compelling speaker and TEDx presenter who makes complex topics clear and engaging. He, rising from entry-level engineer to the C-suites, he has led multiple 9- and 10-figure businesses across technology and defense. And beyond the corporate world, he is a successful investor with interests in real estate, private equity, debt securities, and entertainment. And through his unconventional anti-entrepreneur program, he is reshaping how professionals think about wealth and success. So with that said, thank you so much for coming and hanging out today, Matt.
Eli, it is an absolute pleasure. I'm so excited to be here and talk to you, and of course, then talk to all your followers as well on this show that has probably one of the coolest titles I think I've ever seen for a podcast.
You know, it's so funny. I see people when they share their show out, they're like, hey, I was just on the Meet Cool People show with Eli. The biggest comment is always, that's a cool name for a show. And I was like, well, that's good. I like that people like it. And there's a whole story behind Meet Cool People. I'll have to share that with you one of these days, because it was a whole big thing before it became a podcast. So you and I met at Cheryl Powers, author, Writer's Block Symposium, which was a lot of fun. I was a moderator for that event, and you were one of the panelists. And we hit it off pretty much immediately because your book is like small, and I meant to grab it, and it's in my bag. It's in my backpack because I took it. So, okay, good. Yours is on the screen there. Little tiny, small book, which I love the small books because you can stick them in your back pocket when you get on a plane. And so I was like, all right, dude, I got to get a copy of your book. And we hit it off and had a great conversation from there. So I appreciate you coming and hanging out today. So tell us a little bit, other than what I said in the bio, who are you?
So, wow. It's and Writer's Block, that was so much fun, right? It was a great group of people on stage. We actually shared a table. Mm-hmm. And this was the first one I had ever been to here. I'm still relatively new to the Dallas area. And I showed up and you were like, you'd already had everything all set up. You had like the step and repeat and everything there. And I showed up with like, I think I had like a couple of books in a coffee cup or something like that. And well, the coffee cup was for me to drink. So
I've been doing this for a really long time. So I got all the swag and everything.
It was like I was going into like a trade show, and I here I am with like, you know, some books, and I think I brought my Radar book also. This entrepreneur one isn't my first book, so just to show people like, hey, I can write a book. I can write a large book too, but the idea behind the book being small like that, Eli, is so that people actually read it. Yeah. Right. I've written very large things. As a matter of fact, the first draft of this was about 5 times as long. And I just continued to hone this down, to get this to something that people will actually read. It's about 10,000 words, which means it should take you somewhere between, let's say, 45 minutes and an hour and a half to finish. Most people can spare 45, let's say an average of about an hour. They can spend about an hour for something that's an easy read and has some really useful information in it. And that's why I got it to that particular length there, and not another mega book of you know, here's 300 pages of which you're going to read 30, right? So,
yeah, and it's so funny because we had some conversations about that, and it's like in today's world, the short books are better. And I even tell like some of my coaching clients, I'm telling them, and they're like putting, you know, their thoughts on their book. And they're like, yeah, this thing's probably going to be about 300, 400 pages. I'm like, no, you need to make it into three or four books, cut it down, make it smaller, because we all live in this ADHD world. It's got to be bite size. And I was thinking about this. Somebody brought up, I was listening to another podcast and they brought up Jack Canfield's Success Principles. And have you ever read that book? Mm-hmm. It's massive, right? Yep. I mean, this thing is huge. I look at it and get intimidated. And I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm definitely going to get the audio version of that. I have that book. I own it and I have not actually read it, but I have listened to the audio version because I was like, it's too big. So I love that you did that. You whittled it down. And I think in today's world, we need that. We're already over bombarded by so much information. If you can put a book out there that is like, here's what you actually need to know. No fluff, no BS, just the good stuff. People will eat that up every day of the week.
Absolutely. You know, how we consume information, how we consume content, that's continually changing. And I think that's what we're adapting to now is the way that we're consuming content today. If you look at LinkedIn, I post a lot on LinkedIn. I'll give you my LinkedIn address at the end of the show, but it's we don't write on LinkedIn the way we would write if we're writing a book, because people are consuming that while they're in line for a coffee. They're scrolling and trying to see, okay, do I want to stop and read this article? If so, you know, is the hook solid? And if so, then I'll continue to read this 300 word or so little mini essay. But if you write it like you would write for the Harvard Business, then people aren't going to stop. It's going to be dense paragraphs. And even me, I'm waiting for coffee. I'm like, yeah, that looks really good. I'm not going to read that right now. I'm going to skip over that. So, so how we consume content has changed. And I think that, you know, throughout my career, you kind of mentioned a little bit about myself. Throughout my career, I've always been trying to look at how are we operating today? What are the principles that we can leverage and double down on from the past? And now, what are the ones that we need to modify, update, reinvent, et cetera, going forward? And that's been with me since I was, I did start out, I was the lowest entry-level engineering position that the company had back in when I got out of undergrad in the year of our Lord, 1990. as I continued to rise up in both the technical, but the leadership ranks, you know, looking at, okay, what were we doing in the past? It just doesn't really make sense anymore. I remember that we were doing, I was in defense at the time, so I'm going to be a little careful on what I tell on this story. We were doing some work on an advanced radar guided missile. The way we had used to present data, I was actually when the said on these slides, make the title tell the story of what you're going to be showing them with the actual data from the from the missile that was telemetered back and so forth, as opposed to they would just put like they had like an innocuous title for like missile data or something like that. And I was like, you know, we're really missing the, you know, a way to connect with the audience if we don't change. So I was like the first one. I was like, you know, 1 year out of school, I was the youngest one in the company. I was like, you know, the first flight test and stuff that I did, I was in charge of the analysis for. I was like, I'm going to change the way we do the titling on this. And everybody was like, that's not the way we do it. You know, we put missile data on here. And I was like, but that you could tell them what they're supposed to be looking for, which of course we all now know the, you know, whether it's based on NLP and pre-programming or just the tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them and tell them what you told them, you know, the standard how to give a speech things. We do know that we preconditioning people to be receptive to what we're going to be telling them is a key part of the battle. So that's kind of what a little bit about my career from a different lens, other than just like reading a resume or reading a CV, is like trying to find what we can use today from yesterday and what do we need to reinvent, update, throw out completely.
Right. I love it. And it's, you know, you brought up a couple of things with that. Is like, for me, one of the things we talk about, like the difference of how you would write for a book versus how you would write for LinkedIn or whatever. As a writer, I'm very big into it should be the same, because of the fact that we are in that world where, you know, you've got to have, it's got to be short, sweet, it's got to be easy, because people aren't reading as much because they're so used to the other type of stuff. And so for me, I've always been no, you write how you talk, you write in conversation. And, you know, there's obviously you got like the more, you know, instruction manuals and stuff like that is a little bit of a different exception. But for most of us, the more you can write like somebody actually talks or thinks, it makes a big difference and it makes them want to read more.
As long as you're a good conversationalist.
As long as you're a good conversationalist.
If you only speak in 5-word sentences, you will not, you know, do not write the way you speak. You know?
Yeah. then the book's going to be really short.
Right. Or it's going to be very, very monotonous. So
yeah.
So yeah, but you're exactly right. How writing in a way that's digestible, because there's no success is your ideas are captured 100% in the mind of the reader, right?
Right.
There's no, you know, success isn't like, well, I made it sound very, very academic, or success is not,
right.
You know, look how smart I am. I used loquacious in the text. It's a, you know, the, I guess I'm being a little loquacious right now in this example, but the you know, so it's to convey the information. And when yeah. you realize that's what the success metric is, then that opens up a different lens of viewing how you should really write and how you should really view even the relationship with your audience.
Great. No, I love it. Very cool. So tell us a little bit about how this transition has happened. You've been working for very large corporations and the government, you know, defense contracts and stuff like that. But you've switched to helping people, not just like most people say, quit your job and start your own thing, you know, or they really don't understand how to create wealth and not just be a button pusher. And this is where you've taken your life and some of the stuff you're doing. So kind of explain a little bit of how that journey came and, you know, what does that look like?
Sure. So when I was a kid growing up, we kind of valued a few different things in my household. We valued being smart and working really, really hard. And that kind of formed my identity. One thing I found out later though, was as I was looking back on my childhood, we also had a pretty heavy scarcity mindset growing up. We didn't talk about money. Money was risky. Money was something for somebody else. Now we weren't poor, but we weren't definitely not, you know, wealthy or rich or anything like that. So that kind of like focused me on like what I was going to do. I was going to work on minimization of risk and always trying to be the smartest one in the room. I went to engineering school because if you got a job in engineering, that was pretty safe, you know, and again, minimizing risk. And as well as, you know, showing that you're the smartest one in the room. And I continued pushing on that thing. I ended up going back and getting a PhD. And then, you know, this scarcity mindset though was still kind of with me. And I ended up getting divorced from my first wife, and it cost me a lot of money. There's a joke about like, why is divorce so expensive? Because it's worth it. But we can save that for another time. And then they just rocked that scarcity mindset. And as I was continuing to move up in my career, I kept thinking that, you know, I should be farther along. I should have more assets to my name. I should, you know, making good money, but it seems like it's, you know, I'm not really gaining much in the financial realm. And it just happened that, you know, several years ago, I got invited to be part of this private mastermind group. And the way I talk about engineering and the fluency I use with that was kind of like the way that they talked about money and investments and thinking about how to structure finances and portfolios and things like that. They weren't any smarter than me. I absolutely, you know, will not say that they were any smarter. They just had like a different framework. And that being invited to that kind of changed everything. So I started changing how I did my investments and changing how I looked at things. And that led me to this concept of, you don't have to quit your job to be financially successful, but you do have to play a different game than just putting your money in a 401k or a Roth IRA or abdicating the financial responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I love that. And it is, you know, it is one of those things, like I come from the entrepreneur world. Like, I mean, my parents weren't, my family, I wasn't raised in that. I ended up realizing probably at 21 is when I realized that I just shouldn't be working for anybody else. I think you and I talked about the fact that I'm completely unemployable. And that's when it was like, okay, yeah, we need to figure this out on our own. And then I realized, oh yeah, I'm just wired differently. But, you know, one thing I always tell people is like, not everybody is wired for that. And there's nothing wrong with having a job, being, you know, being an employee, whether it be a regular everyday job or CEO or whatever it is, but you don't have to play by all the same rules either. And getting your act together. I think that's one of the things that, especially when you're talking about finances, that's one of the things that a lot of people, especially in the employee world, don't talk about enough. And I think that there's, and it's hurt us. It's hurt us. I think as kids, we weren't raised with enough of it. And I've seen it because I know from the age of probably 22 to 30, I learned more than I did the first, 20 plus years of my life by a tenfold about how money works and how businesses work and how the world really works outside of go get a job, get a good education, all the basic things we were told as kids. So I love that you're sharing more of this kind of stuff and going, hey, you don't have to make extremes, but here's how you need to change your thinking.
Absolutely. What we're doing today just is not working. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Yep. We have in the United States of America today, we have a $7 trillion shortfall in retirement savings. Now, 7 trillion, I think we all look at that and it's like, well, that seems like a pretty big number, but we're sort of like numb to how big that is just right. Because we throw the volume of the government and so forth has just kind of numbed us a little bit. So to put that in perspective, that $7 trillion, that is more than the United States federal government spent in 2024.
Wow.
So if we took a whole year of government spending and did nothing else with it other than try to shore up retirement, so this means, no Medicare, no Social Security, no military, no right. roads, no nothing, no zero, just put it all towards retirement. We would be pretty close to fixing it. We'd still be about $200 billion short, but we'd be pretty close to fixing it. But we can't do that. So what we're doing right now today just isn't working. So what we have to change the narrative. And what I'm trying to do is push on multiple fronts, Eli. Yes, trying to go directly to people and I can work with me. We can fix this. I can help you. I can show you the way. I can show you what I've done. But we also have to get in with the businesses as well. And I've started working with different companies and having some discussions with them. But let's change how you talk about money and wealth in the workplace. I did a TEDx talk on this last summer, and I think it's doing pretty well. It's quarter of a million views, something like that, so far. And it basically says we need to change how we talk about wealth in the workplace, because we're already set up to learn and grow there. But instead of like just talking about, well, here's the four or five mutual funds you can pick, and let me know what percentage of Roth versus 401k you want to put it in, we can talk about, well, we can teach our people what it means to really not take control of their finances and not abdicate them. We can teach them the difference between financial literacy, which is spend less than you make, and wealth creation, which is accumulate assets that will grow in value in a way that preserves capital as well as grows in value.
Nice. So, and you just touched on something really important, I think. So if as a small business, let's say, anybody that's a business owner, entrepreneur, that's getting out there and they're getting to the point where they've got employees, maybe they may only have two or three, or they might have 10, but it's still on the smaller side. What are some of the things that they should be doing to be able to like help educate their people to make the right choices and say, hey, we want to help you create wealth and not just, be here and, just do your job. We want you to succeed in life.
So when employees are under financial stress, which they don't really talk about at the workplace, but it occurs, we see increases in distraction, absenteeism, and turnover. They leave because they're under financial stress. They'll quit working for you to go work for somebody else for $5,000 or $10,000 more a year because it's a little bit more money, because they're only thinking about like top line numbers as opposed to like, real things that move the needle for them. So it's what you're highlighting is so important. If we can, you can make your business stronger by making your employees less stressed about money. And the way to do that is to teach them, is to talk about, well, to say that there's more out there than the options that are, that most companies typically provide, which is either a Schwab or a Fidelity, series of mutual funds.
Right.
So, and if you're not the expert at it yourself, which you don't need to be, but you may have done very well financially, you could share what you did, act as a Sherpa for the employees in your company. And I'll bet, if I had the CEO or the owner of a company, back when I was, 25, 30 years old or something like that, hey, like, we're not going to talk about work today. We're not going to talk about missiles or, you know, missile data or anything like that. But instead, we're going to talk about money, and we're going to talk about wealth. And I'm just going to share with you some key things that I know. Holy smokes, how well would that go over? And you're not giving financial or legal or tax advice, you know, so you're good on FINRA and SEC, but you could share what you've done, or you could bring in experts instead of spending money on pizza parties that or other forced fun activities that no one wants to go to anyway.
Right.
Spend that money on bringing in somebody who's really actually smart about wealth creation, not a guy peddling a product of like an annuity or more stuff from the very transactional financial world today, but someone mm-hmm. who's actually done it. It's yeah. like, look, I'm going to tell you what, here's how to balance a portfolio. Here's how to create something where yes, although crypto is very up right now and gold is very up right now, you don't suffer a 50% decline when those things hit a rough patch.
Right. Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I know if I had had that kind of education and, you know, a boss had come to me and said, hey, we're going to do this because I really care about your success and I don't want you to be distracted. I mean, let's be honest. If I can be a better worker, that's in their best interest. So yeah, if they came to me, that would have totally changed the game. And I think it's a great plan for, you know, a small business owner to be able to think about that as like, okay, not just how do we get benefits, you know, quote unquote, but how do we actually educate our people above and beyond just their job? And especially in this kind of situation, because that does, those kind of things do create loyalty. And I think that that's one of the things that a lot of people just don't realize.
There's a lot of noise in the system right now about hiring, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people talking about, I was just reading an article in the journal a couple of days ago about how many companies are not hiring now because you wait and see how the AI thing plays out. But companies will still need good employees. They'll still need their really top talent. And if you want to find a way to attract top talent, yes, it's working with great people. It's having mm-hmm. projects and programs that are fun to work on that are challenging for people. But also if you say like, and by the way, part of our culture is teaching about wealth in a way that is open and transparent and helps people, as opposed to just like, oh, we don't talk about money here. How much of a draw would that be? I mean, you mentioned you know, going out for happy hour with your friends and people talk about like, what'd you do today at work? Oh, we were going over charts for this upcoming customer meeting. What'd you do? We all worked on individual things. What'd you do today?
We're actually talking about slides with missile data on them.
Yeah, slides with missile data on it. You know, so and how that name could be better. We could be so much better if we changed the name. And another guy says like, well, actually, we took a couple hours off this afternoon, and we talked about money and how asset creation works and you know, yeah, I knew some of the stuff already, but holy smokes, I didn't know all of it. And I got insight into some different things. I didn't know about, you know, why you should or should not put real estate in different types of investments. You know, why, you know, you could, there's just so many different things that you could talk about on that just to help people learn more in a friendly environment where no one's judging them. No one's, you know, no one's going to, you know, think how dumb they are. Just help them. Just right. teach them a little bit.
That changes the conversation. And yeah. I mean, people be like, really? Where is it you work? You know, it's like, yeah, oh, I totally get that. So a couple of things I want to ask you with this. Number one is, as somebody, if they haven't had that education, what's the first place to start? Like, obviously, I know you have programs and we'll put the link and everything at the end. But if somebody is just like, okay, I know I'm behind the ball, I need to get this figured out, what would be one of the quickest things that you would recommend them get started with?
So what we want to do a lot of times is not what's in our best interest mm-hmm. because we want to jump to a fix.
Right.
So what I would recommend is instead helping lay the foundation for the new life that you're going to lead, which is a life where you are thriving in your career and working towards achieving financial independence. And that foundation starts with some really important mindset things. And I not to plug the book, but I go over all those in the book, Antipreneur. It's on Amazon. It's cheap. I think the Kindle copy is like $10 or something like that. So it's way cheap.
Well worth it.
Yeah, well worth it. And I think the paperback is like 15 or something like that. And if somebody is actually just so darn hard on their luck that they can't afford $10, email me and I'll send you a free copy or something like that. But but only if you really, if you really need it. So, because that's what we started about with that. It's the mindset. It's the mindset about the overcoming the myths that we currently have that my 401k will get me the financial success that I want, or that the only way you can become wealthy is to quit your job and start your own company, or that just working hard will get you even the career that you want. It's overcoming those things. It's overcoming what I see in a lot of people as I've got people in our high-end program right now, which is basically working directly with me. Mm-hmm. As I work with people on that, there's this sense of I'm not worthy of being wealthy.
Yeah.
And if we can't get that fixed, then everything we're building is on shaking sand. So you have to fix, like I said, you have to fix that foundation first. Once we do that, then it opens up the door to, okay, now let's talk about, specifically in your career, where are you? How are we going to optimize that to make that the engine that provides the fuel for the whole financial thing that we're going to do. And then the next thing is we're going to look, you have to kind of like on the finance side, you have to look like, where are you today? What do you have? I basically call it a personal finance sheet, which for you, mm-hmm. those of you in business, it's a balance sheet, right?
Right.
So basically, assets minus liabilities equals your equity. So let's look at what the assets are, look at the liabilities are, and at least kind of get a sense of where we are today.
Right. No, and I think that that's so important. So many people, they miss the mindset part, and the mindset part in so many different areas. Literally, it's kind of funny that you bring that up. Today, I was reading a friend of mine, David Hancock, just put out a new book called The Babylon Blueprint. And that book, I'm in literally chapter one, and the whole thing starts with the number one thing for creating wealth, because he's talking about like the ancient principles. If you've ever read The Richest Man in Babylon, that's kind of the basis. You have it sitting right there.
This is right behind me. Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. And he basically, this book is kind of based off of that principle in that book, but with his own more current stories and everything. And the very first thing out of the gate was, you've got to get your mindset right. So I love that you brought that up, because I literally at lunch before we started recording this, I was reading the chapter, and it all starts with the mindset. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
That absolutely. Really cool. It's the foundation, Eli. It's the foundation, because when you have that, then you start getting the mindset of like seeing the opportunities and putting things together. Without that, you start thinking back into like scarcity and.
Yeah. Awesome. So before we start wrapping up here, I do want to ask you one question that I haven't actually brought up yet. How exactly, like if somebody's interested in learning more about you as far as what you do and how you can help them, how is it you're actually helping your clients?
So the particular program that we have right now is I will work with you to work through the Kickstart program, which is basically what we talk about in the book, the different steps to go through on that to basically, and instead of being saying like, okay, here's, spend $10, get the book and do it yourself. It's working with me,
right,
directly with me through that. And we go through everything on mindset, on career. We look you can share as much financial information as you want. But most everybody so far is basically like, look, here it is, help me. And we go through their different financial, basically we build a balance sheet for them. Okay. And then we build a cash flow, and we look at where cash is flowing. And then the third thing we do is we actually look at a risk assessment, because I think that so many people will not protect. They'll work hard to acquire, but they won't work hard to protect what they have. So we look at the risks on that. And that's everything from like insurance to how are things titled, to, or is this set up through an LLC or through your own self, family holding companies, the whole gamut of that.
Okay.
So we just worked through that program. We just worked through that step by step directly with me. Right now I'm doing it one-on-one with people. What I'd like to do is over time is build this into where we get small groups together because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty bright. I like to think I'm pretty bright. And the person who's going with me obviously knows their situation very well, but getting a small group together and working through the material together, I think would be a lot of fun. And that would be a group that then, you know, each of those little cohorts could then, you know, keep in touch afterwards. You know, that might be a contact that you make that lasts with you for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I love that. And that is something you should do. I'm going to tell you right now, you definitely should do that. I know from personal experience, the group coaching was phenomenal when I launched it because a lot of people think they need the one-on-one. And for you, it might be a little bit different just because you're dealing with people's finances and people are sketchy about being willing to share that in a group format. But if you get the right people in there, what ends up happening is you get the most amazing conversations where everybody is supporting each other. And that's what happened with my group. And I've seen other people that did it and said, this is what happens. And I was like, maybe, I don't know. And I tried it and this is what happens is they're now supporting each other. They're learning from each other. People who are a bit more advanced are now showing what they did. And people that are less advanced are now getting excited because they want what that person has. And so now they're more motivated to do the work that they need to do. And it really, if you can work in a group format with your clients, it is a game changer in the aspect of the results that they get. And they don't like, they won't buy into it until you just convince them, try it and let me know. Like, if you want to go one-on-one afterwards, but try it for a couple weeks first, and then let's talk again. When you get that, they're just like, oh, this is so amazing. And they get better results easily just because they have that connection and the extra motivation that comes from it.
Exactly. And you learn from one another and yeah. it becomes less of a teacher student mm-hmm. relationship and more of a, all right, it's just us. We're in this together. Yep. Let's figure it out. Let's go through it. And there may be a situation where I just don't have the personal insight for that, you know, and someone else in the group may. So there's so much opportunity with that. I'm glad you said that. I've been kind of on the fence. I've been talking to some different advisors. They're like, do the one-on-one. You can, you know, they're like, you can make more money that way. I was like, well, you know, I'm this is more about a mission than the money right. for me, at least at this stage of my career. So right. I want it to be impactful. So mm-hmm. thank you for sharing that. I'm taking lots of good notes here.
No, good. I'm glad to help with that because that's for me. And to be perfectly honest, if you do it right, you'll make more money. I mean, really, because more people will get into it, even though you're charging less than you would on the one-on-one, you'll get more people into it and it's in a group format. So it takes less of your time. I find that instead of having, you know, an hour call every week with a client, I have two calls a week with all of my clients. It takes me 2 hours for 20, as opposed to 20 hours to do it. You know, I mean, it's a totally different game.
Yeah, it's much more scalable.
It's much less stress on you. And the better part about it is when you get the groups going and they really like they hit it off and they're getting results, they start talking to each other and they will start running the show more without you even having to say as much. I've gotten on calls where, like for me, I help people with their emails. So I'm literally reviewing their emails and they bring them to me on these calls. I've had times where another member will be, well, wait a minute, what if you change this word over here? And I'm just like, yeah, that's pretty good. I would go with that. And they're like, oh, thank you so much. And then they're appreciative of each other and everything. And I just kind of, I let them go. And it's great because I can be there to help them as much as I possibly can. But when you get other opinions and thoughts and ideas and experiences into it, it changes the dynamic drastically. So jump on the group thing. I think you're going to do great with it, man.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. So we are getting close to time here. Before we wrap up, are there any last nuggets of wisdom that you'd like to share before we finish up here?
You know, we've talked about a lot of concepts of like, you know, changing the path you're on, you know, getting a hold of your finances and so forth. Just as everyone's listening, and we're taping this like right before the New Year's, and so people are thinking about, you know, the whole concept of resolutions and so forth. You know, think about maybe dedicating the next 3 months or so to really getting a handle on your finances, getting a handle on your career. You know, buy if you want to buy my book, great, fine. It does have a lot of good information in there, but like, you know, but there's other resources out there as well that you can get. But double down on that, because let's say 90 days from now is basically the end of March. That will come whether you are taking an active role in making that the best outcome as possible, or whether you're just going to go along and you're basically the same at the end of those 90 days as you were at the start of those 90 days. So be intentional about it. Take, you know, make good use of your time and just start now.
Awesome. Very well. Well said. And I will do the little plug. Guys, just go buy the book. Don't screw around. Just go buy the book. Okay. All right. So last question is going to be the easy one, but I got one just before it. The last one's going to be how people get a hold of you. But before that, this is the Meet Cool People show. And I love to ask every one of my guests, what are the words Meet Cool People mean to you?
So when I think about that, I think of three things, and I actually have these on a note card that's taped above or below my monitor, actually. And this is how I approach every single day. It's to create, attract, and recognize opportunities. And when you think meet cool people, what are we doing? We're creating opportunities. We're attracting, and then we're recognizing those when we see them. So that's what Meet Cool People is. It's creating, attracting, and recognizing opportunities.
Well said. I like it. Nobody's used it that way before, so I like it. Definitely. Very cool. Okay, so how can people get a hold of you? Because I know people are going to want to find out more about you.
Absolutely. So the best way is on LinkedIn. I'm Matt Markle on LinkedIn. Basically it's the LinkedIn profile that says Matt Markle and has a picture of somebody that looks like me. That's the easiest if you have somebody who doesn't look like me, that's probably the wrong Matt Markle. But if you get the one that looks like me, then that's the right one. Follow me on that. I usually put out 4 or 5 really high value, high content posts every week. And we'll continue that into the end of the new year, putting some really good content on there. So follow me on LinkedIn is number one. And then for more information on the program and so forth, we're redoing the whole website right now. But if you go to anti-preneur.com, that has a lot of the stuff about the program there. You can also sign up there for our free digital magazine that comes out every week with basically one tip to help you thrive in your career and one tip to help you achieve financial success.
Awesome. Love it. And we'll be sure to put all of that in the show notes as well, my friend. All right, Matt, thank you so much for hanging out today. I knew we were going to have a good conversation, and I appreciate you coming and sharing with us.
It's been my absolute pleasure, Eli. Thanks a bunch, and you have a happy new year now.
All right, you too. And everybody else, get out there. Have an amazing week. As always, if there's anything I can do to help you out, reach out, let me know. Take care. And that wraps up another Meet Cool People show. Now, if you like what you heard, be sure to give us a like, subscribe, or review so I can help introduce these amazing cool people to even more amazing cool people. And just remember, meeting cool people is just the beginning. You need to have a system in place to follow up with the amazing people that you meet. This is exactly what we do for our clients. Now, if you'd like to see if my team and I can help you, go to convertmoreclientsnow.com and check out the case study video to see exactly how we're helping our clients turn casual connections into cash clients for life. Again, go to convertmoreclientsnow.com and see how we can work together to turn you into a follow-up rock star.